Today I want to talk about traumatic brain injury, also called closed head injury. It can be difficult to establish disability in brain injury cases. There's kind of a standard rap you'll get from neuropsychologists about why this is so. Brain injury is highly variable, the exact areas damaged are different for each person, the cognitive consequences are different from one person to another, etc., etc., etc. Now, I'm not going to give you that standard rap. Instead, I'm going to tell you that it's been hard to demonstrate disability because what mental health professionals and doctors have been doing is incomplete. It's been based on the best science of the time, but science always advances, and new methods are available now. So I'm going to tell you about new science that can help make disability in these cases, I hope, a little easier to demonstrate. Now, just to use a metaphor for a traumatic brain injury, I want you to imagine a situation. Someone comes into a doctor and says, "My arms and legs are sprained." The doctor then examines the patient's legs, checks the strength in different parts of the legs, asks the patients to flex or tense the legs in different ways, takes an x-ray of the legs. Now, obviously, there's some glaring omissions in this medical evaluation. The patient's arms were never examined in anything like the kind of detail that his legs were. Second, the patient's known to have soft tissue damage, and x-rays don't show soft tissue, so the wrong kind of image was used to see what's going on with this patient. Now, as an analogy, this is exactly the kind of situation that victims of traumatic brain injury encounter all the time. First, it's well known that people with traumatic brain injury have deficits in two areas of thought and behavior: cognitive abilities and social abilities. If you look up the description of traumatic brain injury in any neuropsychology textbook, they mention cognitive problems and personality change, social and emotional problems. So what happens then when a traumatic brain injury patient typically gets evaluated by a neuropsychologist? The patient's cognition is tested in great detail and objectively. Social and emotional problems that the patient is having are not tested in the same objective way. Now, the second thing is, although it's well known that brain scans done on the day of injury are not sensitive enough to show everything that might be wrong with the brain, these are the scans that are sometimes used to support the idea that there's no objective evidence of brain damage in a traumatic brain injury patient. So what happens in those cases? The person with traumatic brain injury may be denied disability benefits because a known area of disability simply has not been demonstrated. Let me tell you about a story about a young woman in Australia who had a moderate traumatic brain injury. Now, cognitive tests showed that she had no lasting memory problems. She had some memory problems immediately following the accident, but no lasting memory problems. The neuropsychologist also gave her some cognitive tests of what they call executive functioning. That term is in your jargon dictionary, in your handouts. Executive functioning is used to refer to a whole collection of high-level cognitive abilities, including the ability to keep several things in mind at once, which is called working memory, the ability to control attention flexibly, which can include both screening out distractions so that you can focus on one thing, and also being able to switch quickly between different focuses of attention when you need to. Executive functioning includes the ability to plan sequences of actions or events, and the ability to inhibit some behaviors to engage in what's needed for the problem at hand. And it's also used to refer to the ability to put all these abilities together to solve complex problems. Okay, so that's what that term means. The neuropsychologist gave this young woman some tests of executive functioning, and she did fine on those tests too. Now, I'll get back to this point later, but not all executive functioning tests are sensitive to traumatic brain injury. So it's no surprise that someone with traumatic brain injury might do well on certain tests. So based on these neuropsychology test results, this young woman was denied disability benefits and told to return to work. However, she had some serious problems with social behavior. She'd been a receptionist. She went back to work as a receptionist. Every time a man called the office, she propositioned him. Not such a good quality in a receptionist. It wasn't that kind of office. Her behavior was way outside of social norms. But this was kind of seen as a moral failing on her part. It was not seen as a neurological problem. She could stop this behavior if she wanted to, was kind of how it was seen. In fact, the parts of her brain that allowed her to inhibit inappropriate behavior had been destroyed by her injury, and she could not stop doing this. She could not help what she was doing, exactly. She was disabled because of damage to her brain, but the correct assessment methods to show what her disability really was weren't used in this case. It's really vital for traumatic brain injury patients that all areas of potential disability are measured and assessed objectively. Now, as I said above, scientific articles and neuropsychology textbooks about traumatic brain injury all say that personality change, social judgment problems, problems controlling emotions, these are all common consequences of traumatic brain injury. They tend to be more problems with moderate to severe traumatic brain injury rather than mild. I'll get into that later. Furthermore, there's lots of research to show that the social deficits that these patients suffer are exactly the deficits that lead to severe and long-lasting consequences for traumatic brain injury patients, even years after the injury. We also know that cognitive problems that these patients have do not predict social problems, so it's not enough to measure their cognitive problems. There's this idea in neuroscience and psychology of multiple intelligences, that the kind of cognitive intelligence that's tested by IQ tests and some of these cognitive tests that neuropsychologists use, it's only one kind of intelligence. We may also have a kind of creative intelligence, musical intelligence, emotional intelligence is a term that's gotten a lot of use in the last few years, and social intelligence is one type of intelligence. It's not quite the same thing as just being smart cognitively. So I've noted some articles relevant to that in the references section at the end of this PowerPoint presentation, and that's that. The PowerPoint slides are all downloadable from my website, sscompetency.com/attorneyresources.html. The bottom line is that here's a major area of disability in traumatic brain injury, these social and emotional deficits that the person suffers, that's simply not being assessed objectively. Now, historically, you can kind of understand why this might be the case. There's a much longer history in neuroscience of studying the brain basis of cognitive processes and cognitive abilities, of studying memory, attention, language, and vision. It's really only since the 1960s that neuroscience has realized that there are brain systems specialized for processing social information. There are special areas for face recognition, for emotional control. Certain parts of the brain are really specialized for taking in that kind of information and processing the social world. But because not everyone's aware of advances in neuroscience, of what we now know about the brain basis of social behavior, a lot of psychologists and people in the general public still believe that while cognitive problems, like memory problems, can have a basis in damaged brain tissue, social and emotional problems are not brain-based. They're just a reaction to the trauma of the accident and the consequences of the accident. But in fact, that's not correct. Problems with social judgment and being able to control emotions aren't just a psychological reaction to the accident and its consequences. They can have a brain basis also. There's so much new research, in fact, in neuroscience on the basis of social behavior that the term social neuroscience was coined in the past decade to describe this area of research. There are PhD programs in neuroscience dedicated to social neuroscience, and there's an entire scientific journal called Social Neuroscience, which is dedicated only to research in this area that was started 3 years ago. So there is a lot of new science that can back up ways to measure social problems that these patients have objectively. Now, obviously, social behavior is a very, very broad term. It includes all kinds of abilities, so recognizing what other people are feeling, being able to tell when someone is being sarcastic or deceptive or isn't trustworthy and is trying to rip you off. Now, none of us are perfect in any of these abilities, but most of us are not as impaired as someone who suffered from a traumatic brain injury. And a lot of the time we can recognize what someone else is feeling. There are other social competencies too. It includes being able to judge what's appropriate in a given social context. For instance, you can talk about your family's internal conflicts with members of your family and maybe with your close friends, but not with strangers. It's just not appropriate to do that. It might also include being able to tell what's appropriate in a social hierarchy. So, there are different levels of social status within different social groups. So, for example, the boss at work really does have power over you. So you might want to exercise some discretion and deference in what you say to the boss, not just blurt out the first thing that comes to mind. This can be a problem for some people with traumatic brain injury when they go back to work. Social competencies also include just being able to converse appropriately, taking turns in conversation, listening to what the other person's saying, making your comments relevant to the topic at hand, checking whether the other person is interested in what you're saying. And you really see that these kinds of problems in conversation are real difficulties for people with traumatic brain injury. Now, all of these abilities can be measured objectively, and they should be measured objectively. So in a little bit, I'll talk about some specific tests that are available now. But first, I want to backtrack a little and go over some of the basics of traumatic brain injury, because I'm not sure that everyone here is familiar with it.